Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about athletes today on the show. Athletes experience all kinds of pressure when they perform. Sports fans have seen the struggles of U.S. gymnast Simone Biles, for one, and just recently U.S. alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. Today we're talking about how athletes balance performance and their mental health. And our guest is Claudia Reardon, a professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW. So do you think Olympic athletes put too much pressure on themselves, or maybe it's just the public pressure? Athletes, how do you overcome mental blocks? You can join us, too. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Professor Claudia Reardon, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
So what are the most common mental health? I know you work a lot with, you're the consulting sports psychiatrist for UW Athletics, for example. What are the most common mental health disorders you see in athletes?
Yeah, well, we see a wide variety, really reflective of what you see in the general population. But there are some nuances. So anxiety and depression, very common, just as they are as anyone in the general population might experience. But there are other things that are disproportionately common among athletes. So eating disorders, for example, that's something that I treat all day, every day among my athlete patients. Certain sleep problems, for a variety of reasons, are disproportionately common as well.
So eating disorders, sleep problem, how are these conditions typically treated? I imagine it's different depending on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, the primary options available to us are psychotherapy, which is talk therapy. So working with meeting with a counselor to talk through various strategies, behavioral strategies to deal with the concerns, and then medications as well, psychiatric medications. And when the symptoms are to the degree of moderate or severe, we're oftentimes looking at a combination of those two types of treatments.
And those medications don't get in the way of athletic rules and regulations surrounding competing?
Well, that's an important question. So there are definite important considerations when it comes to prescribing medications for high-level athletes. When I say high-level athletes, I include collegiate athletes, professional, Olympic, and other elite athletes. So we really have to think carefully about what medications we choose for this population. We need to think about any side effects that potentially could have a negative impact on performance, because understandably, athletes would not be thrilled about that. We have to think, secondly, about safety issues that can come with certain medications used in sport. So are they dangerous in athletes who are working out to extremely high intensity? And then finally, the very issue you're raising is the issue of, are they prohibited in high-level sport? The vast majority of the medications that we prescribe for mental health reasons, thankfully, are not prohibited. But there are some that are. And so in those cases, we have to either find alternative medications or work with regulatory agencies to get our choice of medications approved.
I've over the year, I've taught here for a long time and at the UW-Madison. And over the years, I can think back maybe 15 years ago or thereabouts, I can remember an athlete talking with me about burnout. And the amount, you know, not feeling like I needed that I was any kind of expert on it. I did listen and then sent him on to our counseling. But how do athletes avoid burnout? Or maybe what are some ways athletes can avoid burnout?
Yeah, that's a good question. So critical to avoiding burnout are two things: rest and time away from sport. So rest during the season, and then having some time away from sport to recuperate. And so those are just essential ingredients. But really, burnout is often the culmination of probably multiple factors. So not maybe having the rest and time away from sport, but also perfectionism, high expectations, whether self-imposed or publicly imposed, loss of love for sport, for whatever set of reasons that happens, excessive time commitments that simply aren't compatible with there only being 24 hours in a day, injury, all of those things in various degrees tend to come together and contribute to burnout. So when we're thinking about avoiding or addressing burnout, we really look at those different factors and figure out how we can address that.
I was thinking sometimes family issues can come into play as well. That could sort of mix up the whole stew there a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could have a whole hour-long conversation about burnout and youth athletes and family pressures that come into that. So listeners may be aware of the ever-increasing trend of kids super sub-specializing in a single sport, and they participate in that sport year-round and high-performance leagues, three seasons of the year plus over the summer. Kids see their parents pouring tons of time and resources into their success in that sport, certainly generally with very good intentions and wanting to be supportive and helpful for their kids, but then it becomes a huge part of, if not the sole part of, the kid's identity, and for them to be able to step away from it if they don't love it anymore feels all but impossible. And all the while, they're probably not getting enough sleep because of the intense demand, getting injured, and those kinds of, so all that together is a recipe for burnout, too.
Jeff in Superior has a comment. Let's go there. Jeff, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm a graduate from Notre Dame, and some of my classmates when I was in school, we would talk just as friends about how they could improve their performance. I lived in a men's dorm, and we had soccer players, hockey players, football players. So I knew these guys and went to class with them. And I actually believed that I could be a pretty good psychotherapist if I wanted to. After graduation, I went into drug and alcohol treatment, and I was very perceptive in terms of reading people and talking to people about their feelings and thoughts about things and how you could change your thoughts and improve your outlook on the world. I don't believe in medication. I don't think that's a good idea because people are growing, you know, before they're 25. I think that it's okay to make a mistake. You don't have to win every game. But if I could ask a specific question, what do you think is the reason why Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback of the Packers, doesn't do well in the postseason? Do you think the pressure of a national audience affects his performance? I wonder what you think.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And thank you for your other thoughts as well. We could certainly talk an hour about medications and if and when that makes sense in developing brains and those kinds of things. But suffice it to say, it's always a risk-benefit conversation when it comes to things like medications. And if a child or adult athlete is significantly suffering, intervening with appropriate treatment really gives you a venue to really change the course of lives. And so, you know, whatever it takes in considering those risks and benefits is something that we think very, very carefully about. And always using the litmus test of what would I want done for my own kids, because that is the litmus test that most of us use. In terms of Aaron Rodgers, you know, I have not personally examined or interviewed him. So, in fact, we as psychiatrists have an ethical stance where we're not allowed to just speculate or try to diagnose or figure out, you know, what exactly is going on with him. But that pressure obviously mounts as the season goes on for any athletes. And, you know, with ever mounting scrutiny in the public eye and media and social media, which is just such a huge stressor for athletes, you know, that certainly can be a factor.
Thanks again for that call. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Talking about balancing athletic excellence and mental health with our guest today, Professor Claudia Reardon professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. You can email us, too, the email address ideas@WPR.org. You co-chair the work group, I think it's called Mental Health in Elite Athletes, for the International Olympic Committee. What does that job entail?
Yeah, good question. So a few years back now, the International Olympic Committee contacted me and also contacted Dr. Brian Hainlein, who's the chief medical officer of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, and asked if we would co-chair a newly forming work group on mental health in elite sport. The IOC has actually has a longstanding tradition of having assembled these kind of work groups on a variety of sports medicine related topics, and never before, surprisingly, had assembled a work group on mental health. You would think that would have happened before, you know, 2018, but it didn't. But finally, our time came. And so the charge before us was to assemble a 6-continent work group representing, quote unquote, experts in the field of mental health in high level sport. And so we did that and really scoured the world's research on mental health topics when it comes to high performing athletes, and ended up publishing an IOC consensus statement on basically what the research shows when it comes to all different areas of mental health in sports. So what does it show when it comes to depression and anxiety, and substance use problems and eating disorders? And so we published that, and actually a whole series of accompanying papers really to get the conversation further moving in the field and really spark further research moving forward.
I'm sure we could spend a few hours just on that report, but maybe pick an item or two from those research findings, if you would.
Yeah. Well, so just to highlight, you know, I think a lot of people have the understandable but mistaken sense that athletes are relatively protected from mental health symptoms and disorders, and nothing could be further from the truth. And our research findings certainly bore that out. So athletes on average are just as likely to suffer from depression, just as likely, and in some cases more likely to suffer from anxiety, far more likely to suffer from eating disorders. And then there are certain subpopulations of athletes where they actually are quite a bit more likely to suffer from some of these things than the general population. So interestingly, athletes in individual sports, as opposed to team sports, are actually quite a bit more likely to suffer from depression and anxiety. We could talk about reasons for that. Athletes in aesthetic sports, where there's a sense of physical appearance mattering, or where athletes are judged, their performance is judged by a panel of judges, those sports are all more likely to see high rates of anxiety. Perhaps that makes sense.
Yeah.
Than the general population, and then athletes in other sports.
So that's there, and good information moving forward for sure. Louise in Dodgeville, give you a chance. Louise, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question for your guest. So I know you're speaking specifically to athletics, but there seems to be some crossover between like the performing arts or if you have a big presentation at work or a big project at work. So I was just curious about how the two kind of maybe have some crossover. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling. What do you think, Professor Reardon?
Thank you so much for that question. I definitely think there is crossover. So being in these different situations where there are intense situational demands and you're basically being required to perform at a high level, and a lot of times there's a lot of preparation and lead up that goes into that. So, I mean, we think of our Olympic athletes. They're on these 4-year cycles where everything they do, you know, comes down to how they perform in this one moment. And that can very much be the same for fine arts performances and other certain work demands, et cetera.
Absolutely. I was thinking back many a year back to someone that I knew who was doing a call-in talk show, not me, but someone else who at one day just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
That it just couldn't do it. Well, thinking about athletes here and the ones that come immediately to mind to me when we're talking about these issues just raised are Simone Biles and probably Michaela Schifrin. Mental health problems can certainly surface during competition, and saw that with Simone Biles, a U.S. gymnast, in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Maybe describe what happened there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the lead up is important too, and obviously the media can really pump up expectations about athletes to really essentially impossible heights. And then, of course, it's especially easy to do that with such talented athletes as those that you mentioned. You know, and then at that point, unfortunately, failure, a quote-unquote failure, provides as good a narrative for media stories as success does. And so the media eats that up, and an athlete's anguish becomes something that's just really readily and painfully broadcast. So, you know, I think every time a high-profile athlete like that comes forward and talks about their own mental health struggles, you, of course, feel horrible for the athlete, and it really illustrates their humanity. But also, I'm so grateful to them for their efforts to destigmatize the topic.
Yeah.
And they do. I tell you, the days, the weeks after someone like that courageously speaks up, I have more athletes coming into my practice for the first time. Never before saw a mental health professional, but just that sort of normalizing of the process, and it's okay to speak up. It's okay to admit to needing help, and to not be as, you know, perfectly flawless on the inside as their otherwise, you know, perfect outsides would suggest. It's really, it really does a service to a lot of people who then for the first time are able to get help.
Claudia Reardon, our guest today, professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine and Public Health. She also consults sports, is a consulting sports psychiatrist for UW Athletics. Join in with your questions. Number to call 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Courtney Everett, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Professor Claudia Reardon, our guest today, professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW, as we talk with her about balancing athletic excellence and mental health. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Dan in Maquanago, we'll go to you. Dan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Greetings. As I'm driving to my tennis match at noon, your conversation made me think in terms of what kind of differences your guests might see in terms of team sport participants versus individual sports like tennis or timed running events and the like versus basketball, for example, or soccer.
Mm-hmm. Dan, thanks.
Yeah, great question, because I alluded to that earlier, that there are differences. And when it comes to individual versus team sports, it's the individual sport athletes that on average are somewhat more predisposed to get anxiety or depression. Now, that's not to say that any athlete in any sport can't suffer from those things, because surely they can and they do. But it's the individual sports where we see higher risks of that. What people think is it's probably a lot of different reasons. One is there seems to be something about those types of folks who are attracted to individual sports where at baseline, even before they start their sport participation, they may have a bit more tendency to being perfectionistic, hard on themselves, anxiety-driven kind of people, so they're already set up for suffering more in that sense. Also, individual sports by definition are a bit more of a lonely pursuit. You know, you're out there, the cross-country runner by themselves running miles and miles a week versus the football player or basketball player who is with a team practicing all the time. So there may be more social support. If you think about wins and losses, so in team sports, half the players in any given competition are winning. In individual sports, you may have a whole big race and there's one winner. And so fewer people are winning. And it does seem, interestingly, that in individual sports, there's much more of a tendency after an athlete loses, if you will, to take full responsibility for the loss. You know, that is all my fault. I didn't deliver. I didn't put together, you know, the performance that I wanted to, versus the team sport athlete on average, after they lose, there's a bit more of a sense of dispersion of blame for the loss over the entire team. It's not the one athlete saying, oh, I am solely to blame for this team losing. And then finally, on average, individual sports, at least in some cases, have much higher rates of injury. And injuries, we know, equate with much higher risk for mental health problems as well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of things going on there. Dan, thanks again for calling. As you were talking, I was thinking about Jessie Diggins. I talked to her, I don't know, maybe a year ago or so. And she talked to a cross-country a skier who had an eating disorder, went through a terrible eating disorder. And the whole business of practice, even though she did work with teams, still had to do a lot of it on her own. And then injuries, it was a constant worry about that as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What impact can mental health have on athletes on the professional level?
Yeah, a big impact. And I think it's something that historically has been overlooked. And now I think increasingly people, coaches, the athletes themselves realize that mental health cannot be separated from the rest of physical health. The brain is absolutely part of the body. Surprise. Yeah. And so if we really want to optimize the athlete's entire picture of health and therefore their performance, their sports performance, we really do need to consider optimization of their mental health too. And it just makes sense if you think of an athlete being severely anxious or depressed, that their performance is probably not going to be as good as it could be. We know too that if an athlete is anxious or depressed, they're far more likely to get injured, which is really interesting, concerning, but interesting. And that's the kind of thing, too, when you talk to coaches in athletic departments, that really gets people motivated to care about this. You know, so, oh, you're telling me my athletes are going to be more likely to get injured if I don't deal with this. Well, that's compelling.
Oh, boy. Well, I was thinking as you were talking about a Sports Illustrated story of several years ago with a catcher, a major league catcher, starting catcher, who suddenly could not throw the ball overhand back to the pitcher.
Yep.
And he would, it was quite a long story about his mental, he just had a block and he would run, take the ball out to the pitcher sometime, make some excuse or underhand throw it out there, but he couldn't throw it overhand.
Yeah. So some people call situations like that the yips. Maybe you've heard of the yips when it comes to golfers who suddenly can't swing the club adequately.
Putt.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or putt. Exactly. Some people think of the twisties in gymnastics as a form of the yips. It can manifest in different interesting ways in all different kinds of sports. And, you know, we don't have a full grasp on that and what's causing that. On the one extreme, it may be completely an anxiety thing, a performance anxiety thing, just can't do it because there's that performance anxiety. On the other end of the spectrum, it may be a neurological situation where it's what we call a focal dystonia, where truly your muscles just are not capable of doing that movement anymore. And quite honestly, for most athletes, it's probably somewhere in between where there is, you know, a muscle component and then anxiety makes it worse.
Yeah.
And so there are different ways that you can intervene then depending on, you know, what's going on with the particular athlete.
You know, you talked about this the impact of mental health on professional athletes. I'm wondering, is this similar or how different is it from just young athletes just starting out?
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it is similar. So athletes at any level are affected by this. And, you know, and it may have to do with sports-specific stressors and pressures and injuries and, you know, being too busy for their own good. Or it may have to do with things that are completely unrelated to sport. But certainly, you know, with the increased professionalization of youth sports, where youth sports are really treated now how collegiate sports were treated in the past in terms of number of hours per week spent on sport and the pressure that goes with that. We definitely do see a lot of sport-related stressors contributing to mental health struggles in kids.
Yeah, thinking about my own daughter, I was fortunate that she loved a whole bunch of sports, so she would try out different things. Now she runs cross country in college and then indoor high jumps.
Oh, wow.
So, but I was always pleased. I mean, she was sad if she wouldn't make a basketball team or maybe not make the volleyball team, but she always had other sports. She'd say, okay, well, all right, I'm going to go do this then. And that was really helpful. You take somebody like Michaela Schifrin, who I mentioned but really haven't gotten into much. She's another athlete who experienced, you know, mental health struggles during the Olympics. Was her situation similar to Simone Biles, or in what ways do you think it might have been different?
You know, we don't know. We don't know the details of what was going on with Schifrin. And, you know, as I said before, I can't really speculate or diagnose someone I haven't personally examined according to the ethics of psychiatry. But I think, you know, when people exhibit what she did, and not to say specifically with her, but for us as the public to see in the moment what it is to be a human being, an athlete who is actually a human being, lo and behold, that kind of candid public honesty, I think further does break down stigma. And again, just like with Simone and so many other athletes, that is just so courageous and helpful for us to be able to reach more people.
It was such a, I think it was a stressor for those of us who were watching Michaela Schifrin. You know, she fell the first time. Well, that was a big surprise. But then she fell again. And then you just wanted her to just finish, please finish the race for your own good and just get down the hill.
Yeah. Right.
I think a lot of people were feeling that way.
Yeah. It is painful to see. And hopefully people have empathy and increased empathy for athletes when they do see that kind of thing. Because I think, understandably, athletes are viewed as gods, flawless gods, and they won't be hurt if we criticize them or, you know, comment in social media and hold them to ridiculous and extreme standards. But of course they're hurt by that.
Yeah.
They are human. And as much as, you know, everyone tells them to stay away from social media, don't read what people read or say about you. They do. They come across it, and it's really, really hurtful.
And just thinking about my own circumstances, you know, you might get 100 praiseworthy emails, but the one you remember the longest is the one where you kind of somebody took you to task.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's the one thing that you remember out of all the positive. And you know, people don't realize that what they say like that really makes an impact. But I mean, I hear about it all day in my practice, and it does make an impact.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Rebecca in Genesee next. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the air. I just wanted to ask the question, if you ever thought about having your clients think about equine psychotherapy or equine-assisted learning for helping them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love horses. I think animals in general can be really therapeutic, especially, you know, when it gets you out in nature. And we know that can be helpful, just being outside and being around animals for depression and anxiety. So it's the kind of thing that, I wish we had more access to. B, I wish was more rigorously researched, because I suspect the findings would be positive. And C, that my athlete patients here at the University of Wisconsin had more time to do, because that's certainly an issue and challenge that we face. They are just so painfully busy. But I really appreciate that suggestion, that point.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. Appreciate it very much. We have a number of emails that we should get to as well. Tony called from Madison, says his son is going into high school next year and he's preparing for golf tryouts that coming up in 5 weeks, and he's worried. What can parents do to help alleviate the stress when it comes to sports tryouts?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think, reminding your kiddo that you love them no matter what, it'll be okay. Making sure that they continue to have multiple sources of pride and identity, so that sport isn't their whole being. And so they're then, you know, if they don't make the team, it's not like, oh, there goes my whole life and identity. That's where definitely encouraging multiple sport participation can be helpful. Making sure not to add on to the pressure and letting kids have autonomy and ownership over their sport experience, to making sure, hopefully, coaching pressure isn't undue as well, and making sure that, to the extent possible, that the coaching presence is a positive thing can be helpful too. Yeah.
I went through that 5 years ago, Tony, when my freshman daughter was going out for the golf team. So I know exactly what you're going through, and Professor Reardon's advice is very good, very good indeed. David sent us an email. He's a gym owner in Wanakee and is coach for a local volleyball club in Madison. One of the biggest issues David sees working with athletes between the ages of, say, 12 and 22 is the early emphasis parents and coaches place on the success of these kids before they really truly develop and grow both physically and mentally. Young athletes need to be allowed to grow, learn, and fail.
Yeah, no, so that's a really important point. And one of the problems comes when kids are pigeonholed into a certain sport before they're even fully grown and developed. So we actually don't know what sport their strengths and their body types might be most conducive to, but then they feel like they have to make their body type fit into that sport because that's all they've been doing since they were four. And then also, before we actually know what they like. And so letting them sample multiple sports, whatever they want to do, not just one sport year round, on average tends to be very helpful for kids.
Yeah. Karen emailed asking if she wants to know what you think about medications an athlete really needs, but they enhance performance, like maybe stimulants for ADD kids.
Yeah, so stimulants, that's the one primary class of psychiatric medications that are typically on prohibited lists, whether that's through the NCAA or through national or international Olympic competitions. There's some old research that suggests that stimulants may allow you to work out to harder intensity than you otherwise could without perceiving as great of an effort as you otherwise would. So you basically can push yourself harder without feeling as tired. So that, you know, it's old research. It's not perfect, but it's certainly enough that those medications make it onto a prohibited list. Now there is a way to be able to prescribe those medications in situations where it's absolutely medically necessary, but that is the one class of medications that potentially has that performance enhancing effect that we otherwise would prescribe in psychiatry. In terms of common medications otherwise, antidepressant medication, anti-anxiety medication, there's no evidence that those are performance enhancing. So they are therapeutically beneficial in terms of treating the depression and anxiety so that you can improve back to the performance you otherwise would have had if you weren't depressed and anxious. But it doesn't get your performance above what you were otherwise capable of.
Hmm. Jennifer emailed us. She has a 15-year-old daughter involved in high school and club volleyball. Within the last year, she's experienced significant anxiety, the daughter, that is, never feeling like she measures up to her teammates and usually ends practices and tournaments in tears. Jennifer feels this is not a normal teenage reaction to basic frustration with sports, and it's moving into some significant anxiety. What suggestions do you have for Jennifer?
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear of the situation, and I think getting in to see a clinician, whether that's a pediatrician or primary care physician or a mental health professional, just to have a more comprehensive evaluation of what may be going on there. Is anxiety limited to sport, or is it starting to extend beyond sport? In general, the sooner you can intervene, the better. The other thing we always think about, too, with every new patient we see is we want to be sure there's not anything medical, non-psychiatric medical contributing to the symptoms, because your thyroid could be off or you could have anemia, or these other things that can make for anxiety-like symptoms, too. So I think seeing a clinician would be important.
Just to conclude, maybe, how can we, is there a way or how can we improve the mental health of athletes?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. That's the ultimate question. I think we need more education of all members of the athlete care team, from coaches to team physicians, athletes themselves. It's just the kind of thing that's been so stigma-ridden that people don't even necessarily have what we call mental health literacy in terms of understanding what it feels like if I have anxiety or if I'm depressed. I think we should screen all athletes at baseline as part of those pre-participation physicals for mental health concerns. And then I think we need to have protocols in place so we know what to do in both routine and emergency mental health situations within sports leagues or schools or institutions.
Well, this has been most enlightening, and frankly, even though it's a topic that is kind of sad in a way, it was certainly fun talking with you, Claudia. Thank you so much for being with us. Hope we can do this again down the road.
I would love that. Thanks so much for having me. I agree. It was fun.
Claudia Reardon, professor of psychiatry at the School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also the consulting sports psychiatrist for UW Athletes. We're going to continue with our sports theme and turn our attention to basketball, the men's and women's NCAAs. The tournament's coming up, March Madness, and we'll talk about that with our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.